person you just made us the presentation that is correct is the one that ends with slide number 16. No, slide, yeah. To the 16, 17 will be thank you. That's the slide that we are waiting on. Just to make sure that everybody has got the right to get in front of them. We have noted, Mr., that the other presentation was exhibited, so we just wanted to make sure that members have the right one. So that is that. As we did with the previous delegation, we are going to request the chairperson to lead, introduce, and then members will speak of the delegation introducing themselves. Over to you, chairperson.
Honourable Chair, honourable members, and Minister, good morning. I'm Jerry Vilagazi. I'm the chair of the board of the state IT agency, accompanying me colleagues from the board and the CEO and some of the executives at senior level are with us this morning. With your permission, Chair, I'll ask them maybe from my left to introduce themselves.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Jeff Mayele. I'm a non-executive director on the board of the State Information Technology Agency.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Mbonyi Njangisa from SIT.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Njidalang Kukoliame.
Good morning. My name is Walter Mudau, member of the board.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Zutle Lombete. I'm Executive Director.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Refilwe Mokwena. I am an old board member at SITA.
Chair, Minister, Honorable Members, colleagues, good morning. My name is Michelle Williams.
My name is Sidney Chibubuze from SITA.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Mashurim Zaidoui. I'm the company secretary.
Good morning, Abolchi. My name is Tanya Abrahams from SITA.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members and Minister. My name is Pumian Nomvalo, the Chief Executive Officer of SITA, and I will give the chairperson first to make the opening remarks before I present.
You don't give direct tips or words. It has not even given, but thank you very much for the introductions and presentations. Minister, shall I give you to make opening remarks?
Thank you. SITA is one of the new agencies which has come to this new department, and we have had several interactions with them, and I just want to say, while there may be successes and challenges, we've started the process of trying to deal with challenges, and probably be able to deal with some of those challenges and how they move forward. As you had in other meetings, which you had earlier, the key thing to ask is, what are we expecting them to do? Yes, the SITA Act is here on the mandate. I'm sure they'll touch on those things. But the reorganization of the state, especially the president, has stressed the importance of SITA being brought here to ensure that as a department or as a ministry, we're able to drive e-governance. which is affordable and in a secured environment. You know about the NPP and its targets. The e-governance fee is a mechanism to deliver these services to our people in a more efficient manner. So that will be the key outcome we'll be looking at as we roll out the infrastructure. The sector will be rolling out, making sure that we have got the connectivity that we really have all the government offices connected and delivering services to people in a modern manner using ICTs. We're not saying other statutory functions of CETA, they won't be important, but we'll have to see CETA driving that process and leading and working with other agencies of the government in a more collaborative manner so that we can achieve that outcome. The CETA also is running the backbone of the network of government. All I'm asking also the data basis of government. So it's going to be critical that they continue that function and make sure that because if they have the records of all our state information, that they must make sure that it is also adequately protected. So those are just opening remarks, citizen, and we'll comment once they make their presentation. I'm here for my colleague MP.
Honourable Chair, thanks for the opportunity to meet with honourable members of the committee this morning. As through Chair, the CEO has indicated, the CEO will make the presentation, but just quick remarks. As the Minister has indicated, we derive our mandate from statute. And one of our key functions is to ensure that government information is kept in a secure environment and accessed through a very secured network that government uses. One of the critical functions that we play, for instance, especially in election years, but throughout, is to ensure that the population register is kept secured in our data center, which is one of the mandates, and the CEO will touch some of the mandates. In terms of the accounting authority at governance level, we are a board of 14 members that are appointed by the minister after consulting with cabinet. So essentially they are appointed by cabinet but as the act puts it, as a minister in consultation with the cabinet. We had, when the board was appointed, it was in September last year, so we're about to finish 1 year in the life of this current board, except for the chair whose appointment was in 2012 November. And the board had 6 women appointed on the board and brought different skills from business, from various areas of legal, finance and other skills. We also on our board have appointed also through cabinet nominees from Department of Public Service and Administration, nominees from Treasury, National Treasury. We also had a nominee from the Department of Communication, which I would assume now from the board perspective that nominee would come from our mother department to which we report, which will be telecommunication. I would like just to indicate, Chair, that I think CETA is one organization that is always often in the media. And too often when it is in the media, it's a lot of negative issues that tend to be said, which talks to the historical challenges, and too often you read stories, but when you read in details, you realize it's a report that was produced in 2009, it's a report of 2010, and come back to the media creating something exciting to write about. And most of the time, the issues that are reported and written about in the media have to do with procurement and supply chain management, which almost constitute in about 20% or so of what CETA does. 80% of the mandate of CETA is not procurement, it's providing the services that the minister have highlighted in his comments. So without any further ado, I do want to say, Honorable Chair, that as the board, we are very comfortable that in the last few months we've put in place systems of internal controls, we have put in place systems of governance and initiatives that are beginning to address the challenges, some of which will be highlighted this morning, that we are dealing with and will be pointing the path that we are changing. Thank you, Chair. I'll then hand over to the CEO with your permission.
Thank you, Chair, and my apologies for assuming a responsibility I shouldn't. Honourable members, Honourable Chair, Honourable Minister, the fiscal mandate is in fact quite in line with what the Minister calls what is expected of CETA. When you read in Section 6 of the CETA Act, it says the words, I'll read them, to improve service delivery to the public through the provision of information technology, information systems and related services in a maintained information safety security environment to departments and public bodies and to promote efficiency of departments and public bodies through the use of information technology. And this comes from the CETA Act. And this part of the mandate talks to the issues that the Minister is talking about, enabling government to provide services in an efficient, affordable manner in a secure environment. That's basic crux of the mandate. The legislation then goes on to cover specific things that it calls mandatory and non-mandatory services, but the overriding message comes from the mandate of power. Now, this then has got implications in the manner in which we respond to this mandate, because if you like, CETA is an IT department for the whole of government, and the various government entities, particularly government departments, have got a differing impact in relation to their interaction with society. There are those departments that have got a much bigger interface with society, and there are other departments that do not have a much bigger interface with society. And our service offerings as an institution have got to take that into account. And therefore, our mandate would largely impact on those that have got a bigger impact interface with society, like home affairs, social development, and so on. Those are the types of departments that demand a lot from CETA, but we also need to enable all of the other departments as well. In order to respond to this, we have a structure that informs the work that we do. We respond to the Minister of Telecommunications and Social Services at the moment. We have a board that the chairperson has spoken to. We have certain functions underneath. At the moment, Chair, the executive is predominantly male, with very few females. And we have been instructed both by the Minister and the Board that as we fill some of the vacancies, we need to address the issues of transformation, especially when it comes to the gender issues. And therefore, I'm hoping that the next time we come and report, there will be some movement in this regard. But a note on this structure is that it might look strange that internal audit reports to the CEO, in fact, internal audit reports to the Board, but administratively just to the CEO, but it's supposed through the audit committee to the board. I think that needs to be understood. And also the chief financial officer is an important function that has a much more direct access as well to the CEO. But that is the structure that informs our activities at the moment. Below that, we also have different levels in the organization. We decided to show that slide, and I'll just comment about a few things on this slide. There's a few lines that are worth noting from a transformation point of view. Overall, the gender issue is sitting at about 46%. We think we can still do better than that, but also on the transformation from a race point of view, we do have certain functions that have not transformed much, and there's a history to it. The level C3, C5, level C5, level D1, D3, level D4, D5. Those areas are areas that have a concentration of white male employees, and this is the history. Most of them serve the Defense Force as well as SAPS, and these are the people that were integrated into the organization when when JICA was established many years ago. And there are some vacancies that are given as opportunities in order to drive some of the transformation issues, but that is a picture that we have at the moment. Now, coming to, JICA has been in existence for 15 years. In that 15 years, it has had a history, and the person has touched on some of the challenges that sometimes find expression in the media. And notable is the stability that is required in an organization for an organization to continue driving the projects. And this is an issue that, in our first interaction with the minister, is an issue that he feels strongly about. But in that 15 years, there has been things that have worked. And there have been things that have worked. And the thought we should first mention is that about 7,000 outlets of government are connected in a secure network. The National Population Register, the chairperson has spoken about, there's IT help desks that are helping a lot of government, and the work that we do for the Department of Education, all of those have worked quite well. There are systems that we've been using in government, especially in the area of the payment systems that government uses. They have functioned quite well. They are quite old systems. They need to be renewed. They need to be modernized. But they have functioned pretty well, and it's something that we can build on. We've also helped government come up with minimum interoperability standards. We have strong interactions with the government information technology officers through GTOC. We also have initiatives that we drive as an institution that are meant to open opportunities for young people in the country. We have a youth development project that has exposed about 2,000 young South Africans to the IT environment and through learnerships and internships. And we have a project that we run together with the Ministry for Women and Children and People with Disabilities and other institutions of government, which has exposed 8,722 young girls to the world of information technology through job shadowing and providing some mentorship for them. And some of the people, both from the youth development project as well as from the technical, some of them have actually got a permanent job over the years. So it's not just a project that is a nice to have and then people don't get opportunities. Some of them have gotten opportunities inside. We have also helped the presidential hotline. So the president launched and, in fact, picked up a few calls and responded directly to citizens, and it works quite well. So there is a number of things that, despite the challenges that the organization has faced, have been working and have been working well. But having said that, we also are mindful of the challenges that we talked about. And the chairperson said some of these come from the procurement space. And there's a number of things that we can highlight in relation to the procurement space. One, it takes quite a long time for us to finalize a procurement transaction. Two, because of the poor contract management, we are locked at contracts that have got high prices and making it difficult to meet our mandate in terms of driving the cost of ICT down. The interaction between ourselves, as well as government departments, as well as internally, create a scenario where a lot of the tenders get started and they get cancelled. And if they get cancelled, the intended purpose for which that tender was entered into obviously gets affected negatively. the interaction between ourselves as departments does have an impact on this, especially in relation to the reach specification. At times, some of the challenges are always seen as challenges that are just inside FITA, whereas, in fact, some of those emanate, for instance, from our interaction with departments. There's two types of procurement that we do. There's procurement that we do as FITA, and we then go to the departments and provide services. But also, there's procurement where a department would approach us and do that procurement on behalf of that department. In that instance, the department is going to tell us what we want and all of those things. So some of the policy issues that we need to respond to cannot override what the department has instructed us as a service provider to do. So there are those issues that, as we interact with some of the issues that face it, that we need to understand. And then the issue of the local of SMME development is an issue that also the minister is quite passionate about, especially in terms of local content. We haven't had much success in this area, and it's an area that we need to address. Now, what are we doing to address this? The first thing is that we said there's a long time it takes to procure. We've decided that we're going to reinvent the procurement function, establish a business unit which will ultimately be a subsidiary. In that unit, we then create new processes that are going to be transparent, that are going to give line of sight even to our clients, so that our clients can see where the transaction is at, automate everything, but also improve security in relation to that. We're going to address the issue of contract management, bring in the relevant capacity into the organization that's going to deal with this, but at the same time, create the capability with an IT company for us to have line of sight on all of the contracts so that you can have early warnings when the contracts expire. You can have better negotiations when you have created that. But also we need to respond to the number of tenders that are being cancelled. Here, largely, it's your tender origination process that tends to be a problem. And we want to address that in addition to our interaction with departments, but also in relation to how we streamline it internally so that it works efficiently and reduce the cancellation of tenders. And this entails improving our communication with departments, giving departments access as well to the transactions that we are dealing with so that they can see where the transactions are at, address the issues of the vulnerability to fraud as an institution, introduce automated systems within the evaluation process so that we can be able to understand what goes on inside that evaluation process. And this is technology that's already available in the country. It's used by the Department of Energy. And we want to tap into that knowledge and use it to make sure that we deal with issues of integrity of our processes to eliminate the opportunities for fraud. But also, we need to make sure that the people that we are deploying, both in the procurement function and in other functions, are properly vetted and make sure that that process works well. The department is helping us to fast-track that. In the area of small and medium enterprises, we think that we need to get a better understanding of the market, also have a database that we can understand all of the suppliers that are supplying us, but also create the capability internally. We have that focus on what is happening in the SME space so that we can respond very, very quickly on some of the challenges that small and medium enterprises might be facing in interacting with FITA. On the core services side, core IT services side, we have certain challenges that we've identified. That the movement into digital and digitalization, which is part of the core values that which was founded, and part of the challenge here, and this goes to the issues of the core money that we should be delivering on e-government. Part of the issue here is that we didn't have a properly defined strategy that is going to respond to this. The issues of security have always been issues that for a number of years now, vast departments have raised, and we think that's the same issue that we need to create a much better capability and improve the controls. Transversal capabilities, the systems that are used by a number of government departments are old, and while they function well, there are limited skills in the country to maintain them, so there's a risk. The infrastructure that we're using as an institution is old, 55 years old. We haven't invested enough in this area to maintain and upgrade this infrastructure. The disaster recovery sites leave much to be desired by their existence, but also their limited number of departments are facing Auditor General's queries in relation to this. And the network space, the Minister spoke about CETA providing the core network for government. The last mile connectivity is still an issue. Rural communities are not properly covered. The bandwidth is not big enough. Government departments are facing challenges in this area. And these are all of the things in the area of the core services that we need to respond to. And in relation to e-government, I will talk about it a little bit earlier, and digitalization. We're also saying here we need to work with other government agencies. The minister has made the call, government has made the call, and we are responding to this. We have signed some agreements with some of the entities in some spaces so that we can start working together. But at the same time, we need to provide standards in this area. We need to manage the cost of doing business in government. We need to make sure the equipment that is used in the area is up to date. But as we build the equipment, we also need to encourage an environment in which, as we procure some of these for government, we also create space for local content for some of these items to be developed and supplied by local business people. We also need to make sure that our customers are comfortable and confident that the data that CETA holds and manages on their behalf is secure. And in this area as well, we're establishing a separate unit that's going to do this. We want to create an integration, a link between our physical security as well as our digital security, so that we are able to manage it better and be able to respond a lot quicker to some of the issues that you may find. We also have extended an invitation and to partner with the state security agency so that they can help us in regular reviews of our environment and help us ensure that we can improve in this space. We think that they are an indispensable partner in this regard. In the area of transversal systems, we will maintain the current systems, but at the same time, we want to move into a new environment where we can finalize the issue related to integrated financial management systems. The infrastructure, we need to upgrade the infrastructure. We need to invest in new infrastructure, but also in some areas, there's infrastructure that's already in existence in some of the state agencies. We want to be able to tap into that infrastructure and help those institutions and government that need certain services through the use and partnering with the existing entities that have got infrastructure. We want to make sure that the future, which is computing and the wellness virtualization, is something that we are able to get ourselves ready as an institution so that we can help government and create that better integration that will enable us, when we talk about e-government services, to be able to provide a much, much more meaningful and effective service to government. And of course, in order for these things to work, the network has got to be updated. There's institutions of government here that we partnered with Telkom and BBI. We need to enhance the security in that space and ensure that where these entities are able to provide us with the infrastructure that we need, we are then able to make sure that services are provided through that. Now, this leads me to the talk about e-government. The target that's been set, that says we need to provide X number of services online by a certain date, which is 70% of services. But of importance here is the important role that CETA plays. CETA already holds a lot of government data. You can think of a person, you get born, Department of Health will have your information, people get immunized, they check you for your health, Home Affairs will have your information, the Movement Control System will have your information, Department of Labor will have your information, and so on. And yet all the information is sitting in different silos in these different institutions. And what is important is that we are able to have a single view of the citizen and able to access all of this information at one point. In some areas, there are legislative issues that need to be looked at in relation to the legislation around Home Affairs and so on, but we need to create that capability so that when legislation is sorted out, you are able to have that easy link. You can imagine how easy it would be for a municipality if a municipality has to provide free basic services to our communities in relation to government policy. The municipality has got to make a number of important decisions, and the information relating to this decision sits somewhere in government. Whether a person works, whether a person has got a house, whether a person has got properties and so on, that information sits in various units of government, and it's important that we're able to create the capability and CETA is in a better position to do that, so that we can have that synergy. However, in the area of the government, there has been a number of initiatives that have been taking place across government. Various departments have been doing some projects in this area, and want not to necessarily reverse that, but ensure that we create a better interaction through a top-down approach, and ensure that there's alignment at a creative authority level, there's alignment at a accounting officer level, and there's alignment at the institution level, to make sure that we can reach these targets. These targets can be quite steep if you don't create that alignment, and then the target that we're talking about might be difficult to realize. So there's a lot of opportunities in this area, and thinking slightly differently about this, we can deliver, and also ensure that we partner with other institutions both in the public and the private sector that have got capability to help government deliver in this area. And as an overall picture in the transformation agenda that FIFA has got to do, we've got a number of things that I've talked about that we need to do. There's work that we're doing in procurement, there's those 8 projects there. There's work that we're doing in the core ICT, and I've spoken some of them. There's those projects there, up to project number 14. There's work that we will do both in DLC there, in business enablers as well as organizational level. These things at the bottom are the things that we need to do to help FITA as an organization to be ready to deliver on the core issues that we're talking about, on project number 1 to project number 14. So project 15 to project 23 are all of those initiatives that we're trying to do to help the organization as an institution to be able to respond to the service delivery imperatives that it's mandated to do in terms of the legislation. Chair, the Auditor General audited us in 2013-2014. They picked up a number of issues, and all of the issues that have been picked up by the Auditor General, the board has made sure that they sit down, identify what actions need to be taken, create a dashboard that can be tracked on a regular basis, and on each one of those, there are actions that we are taking to address. And some of the issues, obviously, are issues that will need an engagement with the Auditor General, and they affect government departments in relation to the work that we do, and that are meeting first to deal with that in the next 2 weeks. There is an issue around the organization and its ability to survive into the future. We have had some difficulties in the past few years, both in expanding our business, providing more services to more government departments. We have a few government departments that we rely on at the moment for a few services, and we think we can increase that footprint and have more government departments. We can manage our costs much better and create an institution that goes forward with a reasonable ability to survive on its own and reinvest to invest. We've got a capital budget that we put in place, and we think that there are opportunities to drive some of the projects that we're talking about by ensuring that we spend with this CAPEX and make sure that the things that we're talking about become a reality. There have been issues that I think both the minister and the board and our clients have been worried about for quite some time. Some of these issues found expression in the media recently, but these issues that the people we interact with as CETA do raise as well. Whether CETA will be helped financially, others spoken to that. We think that the approach and the strategy that we're adopting will lead to that, and obviously focusing on managing our costs as well, creating better systems, ensuring that we're able to negotiate for government much better deals. On the government space, I think this board, as well as the leadership of CETA, when there are issues that have been picked up, they take action. And some of the issues that have received attention, they come as a result of work that the board, either this board or the previous board, had said, we are not happy with what is happening here, let's look closely what is happening, let's then deal with those issues. So these issues are issues that come out of work that was done by the board. And it's an important realization, it's an important point to make, and of course, to the extent that some of these issues have resulted with meaningful information, in which action has got to be taken, and action has been taken, and action continues to be taken in the various areas. So this board is 100% committed to ensuring that happens and CETA isn't around. The procurement issues, the strategy that we talked about, we think it will address some of these issues. already seeing some benefits in some areas, but it's too early to see those benefits expression in every aspect of our procurement. When we are addressing them on an ongoing basis. Our service delivery issues, we have challenges with our customers, we've got regular interactions with customers, we have got forums in which we address these issues on a regular basis, and hold people accountable on the delivery of these matters. And of course, the most important asset for us as an institution that deals with technology are the people that work for us. When they leave in the afternoon, it's important that we are confident they'll come back following day in the morning and still want to work for us. And there are issues that we need to address in relation to that, while to the extent that some of them will be held accountable, we also need to empower them. We need to make sure that they are able to do all of the things that they need to do in order to deliver for us as an institution. Chair, I think I will stop there and allow for the questions to be directed at us as the leadership.
Thank you very much. I'm going to note members who want to make comments, ask questions, and then we allow them to interact with them. Honorable Mafulo, Honorable Mafulo. Oh, everybody. Honorable in that line, I think let me just take it that way. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks to the CEO for the presentation. CEO, I speak of something which you never mentioned, and you promised us everything you said you're going to do it, but you not give us the time frame. Well, it's like it's a new, I don't know whether it's a new department or what. What has been done with unauthorized and wasteful expenditure? This is my first question. The second one, you have an issue which is dealt by the, which is identified by Auditor General. You give us promises, you didn't give us details, and you are talking about the board. The board is going to do this, the board is going to do that. Well, I'm not quite sure, and I don't know whether I'm oversighted or what's going on. On this.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the presentation. I just want to ask this question to the Chairperson of the Board. Can you explain the status of the Board as it is now? And there are the resignations that are there. Can you tell us about them? Even the resignation of the CBT Chairperson. And how are you going to bring stability to the Board as it is the one that has to oversee the entity? So, and then Chairperson, I just want to ask about the organizational turnaround strategy. How are you going to do, what are measures in place to make sure that there's a turnaround strategy? Because it's true, we are tired of this negative publications about CETA. It doesn't only affect you. It also affects us as members of Parliament here, sitting in this committee. And then the lessons that you are going to use, the lessons you have gained from reporting the elections to improve the functioning of your of the organization. And then in the Women's Month, what are you doing to empower women? And then the vacancy rate that we are in, because one of the government in the manifesto, the NC-led government means people's create jobs, so we are having problem of vacancy that are funded but not fulfilled. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also to Forsuit and thank the presenter. And I think the many issues you have presented, means like a person who have committed crime and handed himself over to the police. Not that they're going to arrest you, but they'll give you a letter sentence because you came upon, you know, sorry, and confessed. But you're going to be arrested with a letter, you know, sentence. My first concern is on transformation. that we have 2,000 South Africans benefiting in CETA. But I need to get a breakdown in terms of race, gender, and the geographic state, so that we can identify provinces that are not covered. And, you know, something similar like the one on the techno gap, but just get more details on the race and gender and the geographic space. And also learnership, internship, and the battery. What role do you play, I mean, in their placement after they graduated from the benefit of the internships? And on procurement challenges, if you can elaborate on the financial implications of these challenges. The last part one, I'll ask this one in conjunction with the limited development on LMMEs. The fact that not much has been done on local content is really a serious issue with us, because that's where we talk about job creation. SMEs are shown to be one of the areas where job creation and job opportunities are derived. So if nothing has been done on this one, it really bothers us, because job creation is one of our, you know, top mandates on our list of priorities or mandates in general. And the last one is the one of the summary of Auditor General. My question was, it was going to be what steps have been taken, but the presenter has indicated that the steps that are going to be taken, so we really hope that in future we are going to get information that specific steps are being taken and that they are still going to take other steps. Really, it's a serious issue on the regular expenditure. And we think in future we are going to get a report of what has been done with this challenge. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. I was looking at the presentation and the way Mr. Nomvan was presenting that, yeah, he's covering himself like a real former accountant general. I think for me this presentation is helpful because it identifies root causes of these different points. Main points and also controls that are being put in place or going to be put in place. I think it's a whole lot of issues that are raised by the Auditor General and really needs to be followed up. So much as one appreciates the controls that have been put in place or are going to be put in place, but we need to really have the time frame thereof. For instance, I think also on the issues on procurement, the issue of that the supply chain management, especially that, because the AG requests that once those, especially now, it's a new requirement that they should be vetted, especially the SCM. But also, I think it should be important that every, from SCM, but of CINAMIS, or all staff members, for instance, in housing legislature, when I was still there, we made sure that the latest was that everybody who's employed must be clear, including the cleaner, must declare any interest or business interest or what. So I think that it is something that we need to follow up, so that we should be sure that if people are then held responsible or found in conflict, then they should be also referred to their signatures that they've put. I think also the issue of the cancelled tenders. On contract management, you know, I think there's a need for a focused person on this, because these are some of the contracts that you find, and legal person, that you find government paying far more than what it's supposed to pay. And also some instances it's because it is somebody who is not the CEO or the last person with authority, who has signed that article, have entered into that contract. and then the state or the institution finds itself in having been committed without its knowledge on a particular contract, and if it has to be cancelled, cost the institution or the state a whole lot of money, and then we have those headlines and negative press on that. And I think if you could also help the SMEs as this help desk, because these are the real small people that you said they must be established, must be helped, but they are the ones that are killing every time. They close shop because the 30-day payment issues are not adhered to, and so forth. So if the help desk, the real, also monitoring thereof, and to see how much of the help, probably the report that you want to have. This help desk, how effective is it ever since it started its work in relation to helping the SMEs. The infrastructure management, I think it is good to hear that we will not be starting from scratch, but also tapping into existing infrastructure. It also needs to be updated so that then you don't just say it has been here for 6 years and yet it has. It's not very effective. So the upgrading thereof, the use of the optic fiber and stuff like that, for instance, would be interesting. So that this is a new department, but it is not. It is responsible for areas that are losing there. So it's not as if we're starting from scratch. There hasn't been anything. So the issue of the turnaround strategy. I'm happy that the minister is here and doesn't come and say, no, I'm a new minister, this turnaround strategy, I'm starting from scratch. So you turn around what needs to be turned around, but not just blanketly that, no, I'm the new minister, I have my own style, needed a turnaround strategy. And then there's the issue of the systems that some of the government departments operating silos. It is something that has been a concern. I know for myself it's something that I raised in whatever, whether it's a relevant or irrelevant forum, so that somebody eventually will hear this. That we do need really this e-governance. I'm just about finished. But systems need to talk to each other. So I think we are the best place to ensure that. So that if you put my ID on the system, it tells you about everything. And lastly, it's on the interventions that are spoken about, actually there is that plan of intervention. I think what the Auditor General requires also is a written commitment. So there needs to be that written commitment so that even the employees that are there are held to those commitments, and to yourself as senior management, we are held responsible for those commitments. I'm done, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you. Correct me or forgive me for asking some pretty basic questions, because you're new to us and I'd like to know some very sort of basic chat. Mr. Mbalo, when were you appointed CEO? Was it just in the last year? I'm not sure when it was. If you could, I know there have been an awful lot of CEOs of CETA. So if you could just tell us when you started there. So obviously we can't blame you for the stuff that was done at the beginning of last year if you weren't around. So if you could just tell us that, please. Also, my overall impression is that I'm amazed how non-IT smart CETA is. That there are basic systems that are still being done manually. And so one wonders whether the government's e-governance strategy is in good hands for a company that seems to be on paper good in itself. So I'd like to just have some sort of comments on that. You were pretty sort of praising of yourself of the government department of you. I think you went on about the Department of Education was thinking that you were great. But the Department of Higher Education said that you were actually really hopeless at getting out producing the certificates at the end of the year. And also I believe Correctional Services, Water Affairs, Rural Affairs are all decided to not take your calls anymore and doing their IT for themselves. This government-wide ICT strategy, can you please tell me who owns that, who drew it up, and what exactly is that strategy? Can we get a copy of the document so you can see what you're supposedly, or the vision that you're actually chasing? I looked at, this locked into contracts after expiry, because the process is conducted manually. For goodness sake, that's really, 1960s stuff. Then another thing that this is on page 7 of your presentation, where you said one of your pain points is high prices for goods and services procured, and this is because of your limited ability to leverage economies of scale. Now, my limited understanding previously of what CETA was that its major advantage was the incredible buying power it would have, because you're buying 500,000 computers in one hit. So how come you don't get economies of scale? What is the problem then? It just seems illogical that you wouldn't have that. This e-government strategy that you mentioned on page 9, is that the same as the government-wide ICT strategy, or are these two different things? On page 6, your second column talks about government-wide ICT strategy, and then on page 9 we talk about there's no defined e-government strategy. Can you please explain what is happening there? Also, you talk about security, ICT security, and cybersecurity threats. What role do you play on, if any, on the Cybersecurity Council, and if you have any liaison with it, if you're not on it? Your presentation, page 10, you talk of the partnership with government agencies. Who exactly are these agencies? Which agencies are you talking about here? Then at the bottom of page 10, you talk about your network, and you say you need to partner with Telkom and Broadband Infraco. Why only the government departments, the government entities? And you can argue that Telkom's not a government entity, but we all know that it basically is. Can you explain why you wouldn't actually go out to tender for the most efficient, cheaper network? I mean, you're after all trying to, I would assume, get IDE equipment networks in at the most cost-effective price for the taxpayer. And if Telkom B, Broadband Infraco, offered, why can't you go to a private network company? Why don't you put it out to tender there? Sitting amazed at page 11 that the government goal is to make at least 70% of public-facing services online to citizens by 2016. Can you tell me who set that, and is it a realistic goal? And do you have any chance at all of meeting that? We sort of assume that you're actually not going to meet that one. I won't go over the AG stuff, because obviously that gets all the priority. You said I wanted to get what your funding model is. Are you a profit-making organization, or are you just trying to sort of do a non-profit basic thing to get equipment in at the best price? Because I'm amazed at your financial report on page 14, where you say the surplus for the year that you're expecting this year, this financial year, is 201 million rand. Now, as far as I'm concerned, you shouldn't be having any profit at all. You should have actually, you shouldn't be making profit out of government departments. So I don't understand that at all. Perhaps it's my bookkeeping. Then you talk about research and development expected this year of 11.5 million, let's just say. What research and development are you doing, and why do you need to do it? I mean, there's a lot of private investigation out there. What research are you doing, and that it's going to cost 11 million rand this year? And this bonus provision of 50 million rand, which I then worked out as being about 16,000 rand per employee. Why is this bonus so high? Why is it paid at all, first of all? And then why is it so high? I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you. thank you, Madam Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. It was very detailed. There was a lot of information in there, so it's quite difficult to take it in. But I must agree with my colleagues in Longeni and Honourable Maseki on the point of time frames and deadlines. It's absolutely essential that we have this. Otherwise, with respect, you can just come to the committee and you can give us the same presentation year after year after year and raise the same issues, and we'll have no idea in terms of oversight how far you've actually gone towards meeting those objectives and whether these problems are endemic, systemic, and you know how long they've been there. So it's very important that you do that. I thank my colleagues for raising that. With respect, Honourable Minister, the MNC, Soli Mokgadi, in the Johannesburg City Council once said to me, and I've never forgotten it, the challenges are problems without solutions. So I would prefer maybe if we use the term issues or problems instead of challenges, because I'm sure that all these issues can be solved at some time in the future. Just to talk about your, you mentioned that one of the problems that you had was the capacity, capability of employees, limited staff capacity and capability. In terms of, and if I can reference transformation and skilled personnel, let me emphasize from the outset, I am not from the phrase on plus. So personally, I support affirmative action, I support employment equity, and I support diversity more than anything else. And the way I find diversity is when I look at a snapshot of people, I can see myself represented there. Now I'm looking at a snapshot of people. I also look at a snapshot of your stats per division, and I noticed that in the categories A1, and unfortunately it would have been very helpful to have the categories, divisional categories, sort of more detailed as to what they are, but I noticed in the top there's a complete blank. I think we have to have one colored female employee. When we look at diversity and we look at skills, can we perhaps not expand on this and have a look at how we can diversify this more? It would be useful to have that information. Again, let me re-emphasize, I am under no brief for certain population groups, but I do emphasize diversity. I echo my colleagues in terms of e-government and the entities you've engaged with on that. And in terms of a general working model, you emphasize that communication is one of the problems that you're facing, communicating with departments. What sort of project management approach do you apply to the various jobs or projects that you undertake? Because certainly in modern business science, a solid project management approach would encompass all of those, including communication, including delivery, including the expiry of contracts. There is a model that you follow that allows a project manager to control every single one of those steps. And of course, it also allows for accountability within the organization. So if there are any problems, you can identify them. And the buck usually stops with that project manager. So I'd be interested to know that. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, I think before I give over to the CEO and other board members, for me, one of the things that one does when receiving a presentation is to look at the documents. And I just want an explanation of the structure that is presented before the committee versus the structure that is in the annual report 2012-2013 and the strategic plan 2014-2018, because they don't correlate. They don't speak to each other. And just to know, when has the structure changed? That is before us. How did it change and what is the difference? Because if I look at what is in the certain annual report, Minister, we do not have two deputy CEOs, for example. There's a post of the COO that is not on this one. And other things that I think I did. And then the next thing is on the disability that you are below target. Yes, we acknowledge that we are there 1.3% below target. Government target is 2%. And it's 3 times below. Then the other thing, CEO, for me as well, and I think it's something that I'm going to have to request when the entity comes before the committee.
page, slide 7, slide 8, you speak about locked into contracts. You're not telling us how many contracts are still locked out of expiry. What are, and I can see you saying the root process, but how many, the implications thereof. Our role is oversight to oversee the expenditure, the monies that are allocated, whether they are being used appropriately. And if I'm sitting here and I see potential wasteful money, it's an alarm for me, it's a red alert for me. Tenders that are cancelled, obviously, have an implication on delivery, self-delivery, have an implication on the resources that government allocate. How many are those? Where are they sitting? In which department? And why do we have them? Some of the things just reflect poor management, as you said, CEO, poor project management. And the concern where I'm sitting is CETA has 15 years of existence. You can't be operating a system for 5 years or 10 years. The year in which you have been established. But another thing, these are the things that Minister Swale, the Minister of Public Service, had identified in 2010, 4 years afterwards. If you look at the time, 2010, when the issue of turnaround strategy was introduced and was brought through, these issues that are appearing on slide 7 and 8 are the cause of that. And they are still sitting before us as potential challenges as well, or as challenges. Because where we are sitting in 2014, 4 years after 2010, we should be saying this is where our challenges we have moved. It can't be that we are still having challenges that are concerned for the processes that are still in a problem. Because that's a red alert. It just signals an entity in a crisis where I'm sitting. 4 years after turnaround strategy, you're still having the same inflation up coming into the presentation as things that are coming. And even on the issues that are raised by AG, because that's one of the things that we do as a portfolio committee, we look at the issues that are raised by the AG, and we need to find comfort that you are dealing with them. So when you say to us, the team financial audit findings and the board has put mechanisms to intervene, you have nothing to us. Because what we expect is that you say to us, the AG has identified the following areas in terms of procurement. This is what we have put into place to resolve those issues. And this is the progress that we are seeing. Then we can see comfortably that the issues are improving. Where I'm sitting, I don't think so, unless you can convince me. So that's why. And I think Honorable Member raised the issue of, okay, it's not on your presentation, but it's part of what the AG has raised, which I think would fall under the fact that you have not listed. This thing of unauthorized expedition, the concern from us was that there were things that were not condoned. What is the status? Because AG said the unauthorized expenditure that has not been condoned. As per the time of the reporting to Parliament earlier this year, not even very long, July, after the election. Because we had to go and source some of the information from the other committees. That's why we can sit with analysis of your annual report and strategic plan. Because now we take over, it's not starting from scratch, we're taking over from the other committee. So once you know the coordination of those, what are the things that have action that has been taken? Any disciplinary processes out of that? Because this is not something that you leave out and keep quiet. Because you want to understand, especially because if you look at what is said, Minister, 2010-2011, unauthorized expenditure was not condoned as well. 2012-2013 as well. So it systematically pick up over that. And this is why we want comfort with the entity, just to give us what is happening. Maybe just in a very nutshell. If we can get those comments, but I must say, Mr. I'm a bit concerned. It's really a very uncomfortable seat. Give over for the responses.
Honorable Chair, thank you. I will just respond to one or two issues, and then I will let the CEO and the colleagues from the board and also from the executive, the CEO will touch on the colleagues on the board who will come in where they can. My with due apology to each other, I've just forgotten the honourable member's name who raised the issue about the board. There has been three resignations from the board in the last 3 months. The deputy chair resigned, as well as two other board members that had resigned earlier on, an advocate and also a businesswoman. Dr. Anna Mokoko resigned, Advocate Masugu, and the deputy chair is Dr. Vuyo Mashat. I think in terms of dealing with the resignations and the next step, it's a matter that the minister will deal with as the minister in consultation with cabinet to see how the minister processes the replacement of those members. I have to say, Chair, Honourable Chair, that I think CETA has gone through challenges in the last 15 years. You just need to look at the fact that in the 15 years, what we have today is the 17th CEO. It means in 15 years, it has changed CEOs 16 times. We've got the 17th CEO. Mathematically, if you use averages, you can say that each CEO has worked for less than 1 year. Any basic leadership book that talks about successful organization will tell you that stability of leadership is the key success factor. And I think it's one issue that we have to deal with going forward to ensure that, because linked to the movement, we have changed also. Boards have changed almost following the same pattern. But when CEOs change, also the executive levels, which are key for executing in the organizations, have been changing. So it is a very critical issue that we've got to deal with, and I trust from the engagement that we've had with the minister that the minister has prioritized this issue, including the issue of the resignations of members from the board. The current CEO was appointed last year, beginning of June, and as honourable members may recall from the statement from cabinet, he was appointed for 12 months and his contract came to an end, and we sought an extension of his contract, which we got. And this is a matter that currently we will be discussing with Minister in terms of going forward. There has been challenges at CETA. One of the challenges days back, you see, once an organization is subjected to as many turnaround strategies, if you turn around too many times, you get dizzy. You can't stand. And I think in the last 15 years, one of the key challenges of CETA is that it has been subjected to a lot of turnaround strategies, and therefore has not been able to settle down, stabilize, and deliver on its mandate. When we came in, the board was appointed, there were over 1,200 employees that were redundant because the last turnaround strategy had declared everybody in the organization redundant and started from the scratch to interview and employ and place people, and it turned out to be a huge task of placing more than 3,000 people within the short space of time. The board embarked on a project that was called Siashesha, which sought to sort out the internal issues that would enable it to deliver. We're pleased to say that we've made significant progress in filling and placing most of those employees. There are those that are still not placed because we're not just placing them, but they have to go through processes of checking their skills, checking their fitting into the organization, and there is a possibility of some that will not necessarily fit in, and we are looking at that. We do recognize our important role also in the area of CSI. The Technobel, the CEO, will expatiate on that, but we are also running a project where we develop in schools computer labs in different schools throughout the country. We identify schools where we install computer labs as part of our own initiative as an organization to have expansive. I would like Honorable Chair to hand over perhaps firstly to my colleagues from the board if anyone wants to come in on any specific issue. Otherwise, I would let the CEO come in, and if board members want to with your permission, they will do so.
Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Seth Malena again. I just want to add a point to the introduction and some of the explanation the Chair has advanced in terms of the challenges within CETA. I just wanted to make the members aware that the origin of CETA is a difficult one, which is perhaps partly contributing to the challenges that CETA has to deal with since then. I'm pointing specifically to the fact that we consolidated a number of entities in order to create CETA. We didn't have a clean slate. And some of the challenges that we have were inherited from the history of those specific components that formed CETA. Some of you will know that those components were involved in very difficult times of our history, including the fact that some of them were in the defense space, some of them were in the intelligence space that assisted in the difficult old order and so on and so on. And all of those components are inside CETA at the moment. So when we dealt with a merger of the various entities, we did not clean up some of those elements so that we had a clean slate in terms of HR issues that affect not only some of the performance issues, but also affect security issues, if you get to the bottom of some of the incidents. So I just want to indicate to the members that it's a little bit more complex issue that we're dealing with in terms of the people-related issues that contribute to the problems that we're dealing with from this historical perspective.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Zugi Lomvete. I just wanted to slightly touch on the issue of timelines. We as a board and personally, after speaking from the person who was involved with the Presidential Commission setting up CETA in 1999, Mr. Madel, created this problem for us. That I come from an environment having been DG 2010, so to speak, that in terms of project management, the only thing that I understand is who is going to deliver what, by when, and by what time, and what it is that is going to be delivered, so that we can imbue the organization with four things, or perhaps three, that might help to change the culture of the organization. Is that one is discipline, and one which has been very much lacking over the years is accountability. So that we're holding everybody accountable, and those who sit in my committee will attest that I have said that if we do not meet the targets, we want to go to the minister, we must all give our minister our letters of resignations unsigned, so that it will be easy for him just to pen his signature, so that we then, at the end of the term, or prior to a term, we're in position to exit the organization. But the CEO will talk to it that we have put deadlines and timelines that are measurable, and we're going to hold people accountable so that we cannot make empty promises. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I will attempt to deal with the rest of the issue. I think the chairperson and the colleagues have provided some context as well on some of the challenges that the organization faces. On the issue of the timelines and specific things that come from the Auditor General, we can provide that information to the committee specifically, but there are specific items when we say there's 30 items relating to procurement. So there's 30 different things that we have to respond to, and there's specific things relating to each one of them. I must apologize that I thought time would not have been on my side to present some of that detail, but as the committee requires, we can make that information available. And there's also other items where the committee is asking for some breakdown. For instance, the technical breakdown. It covers all of the provinces. There's a breakdown each year in terms of how many people from each province and so on. But the gender on technical is primarily, it's everybody are women. And of course, we can provide the information around the breakdown of the race issues there. So a number of those issues, we will deal with them, Chair, if you allow, on that basis. And then the issues relating to procurement, there's a number of them, and contract management and the financial implications. Essentially, one, and the chairperson pointed out, if tenders are canceled, service delivery suffers. And to the extent that you've canceled the tender and keeping an old contract that's been there, you get locked on a much higher price because you had not negotiated the contracts on the old contract better. So it becomes a knock-on effect that comes from that. And it's an issue that we are as concerned as the committee is to make sure that those things are addressed. Same with the issues of SMME development. We are sharing the very same sentiment that the committee is, and in varying degrees, also the board members have been demanding that we provide some tangible issues in relation to this so that we can respond and address these issues properly. And the effectiveness of the SME help desk, we can only assess that in the future. Again, some of the comments I will just accept present around the silo systems and so on that need to be sorted out. The issue around the e-government strategy as well as the ICT, government-wide ICT strategy. The government-wide ICT strategy document is a document that comes from the Digital Council, which is a body of the e-government information officers that have come together and put that document together under the auspices of the Department of Public Affairs and Administration. So that is that document. But CITA is an entity that has got a mandate to address some of the issues needed to have a policy document, a strategy document that guides CITA in what it does. And when we talk about the lack of the e-government strategy, we're talking about that document that CITA should have had so that they've got a plan in place that they are responding to. And the issues that they're addressing with would address some of the issues that come out of the government ICT strategy as well. So there's a relationship between these, but they aren't necessarily the same document. There's a question about the Cyber Security Council, which is the currently the institution that participates there is the Department of Telecommunications and Public and Program Services together with State Security Agency. We are hoping to participate as well as CITA, but our mother department is participating in that part. The issue around the partnership with BBI and Telkom, those are the two partnerships that have been concluded, but the intention is to look at opportunities of the present support decision that was taken is to make sure that we have a network that is quite open where we can access from any institution that will be able to provide us that infrastructure, obviously at very cost-effective means. I must say that the partnership with these two institutions has already given us some benefit on the cost front. So the issue of driving the cost down does get realized through these partnerships. But to the extent that there are opportunities to extend that, we are not averse to that extension. But what you are saying is that we are seeing distinct benefit in the partnerships that we've done with these particular institutions, and we think that there will be such benefits as well, using the investment that government has already made in some of these areas. So some of the partnerships will be defined by the needs, but as a philosophy, we are saying that we don't want to reinvent the wheel in every respect, especially we are so behind on a number of things. It makes sense where there is infrastructure to start using that infrastructure and speed up some of the issues that we need to do. The target of 70% is a target that is quite steep. We think that the strategy of the top-down creating those alignments will make a lot of that work easy. There's a lot of work that's been done that can enable this, but we do think that it is a steep target, and we are thinking that with the alignment that we've been talking about with the department, creating alignment at a creative level, at the authority level, creating alignment at accounting officer level, and then bringing it down to execution, it should enable us to move quite fast in some of these. There are certain elements in the maturity profile of an e-government service that you can, in fact, facilitate a lot quicker. So we're looking at those opportunities as well in relation to this target. So we do think that it is effective, but we do think that leveraging on those partnerships and alignments, we should be able to do this. Research and development, as an institution that is supposed to provide innovation to government in relation to ICT and our service offering, we ought to have been investing a lot more in this space. We ought to have been cooperating a lot more with other institutions that enable us in this space. So we are saying that we need to begin to make those investments so that we are able to begin to be agile, to begin to be thought leaders in the area, and without that research, we would not be able to do so. We're looking at the moment at opportunities we can innovate in order to improve safe delivery, and I don't have the specifics in terms of the research work that we are doing, but we're looking to improve our participation in that space going forward. There's an issue about the bonus provision. It is easy for an institution like CETA, which has not been performing to its level, to also not think about those fewer, as they are, men and women who really do their part and ignore them completely. And we are saying that because it's not been performing at senior level, you can't pay anything. But you need to be able to identify those areas within the organization where there are positive actions being taken and work being done and work worth noticing, that we do recognize that we've not completely ignored, because in doing so, in ignoring it completely, we are then killing even that little spark that is there in the organization. So the intention is to make sure that we are able to differentiate and create opportunities for those individuals that are performing to be recognized, and then create a precedent for others to realize that if you do your work, you will be rewarded appropriately. And I think that is the intention is to make sure that we do not ignore those good performers that we have. The structure that you're making reference to, for instance, the lower left, the from the top of the page to the bottom of the page, it starts from the lowest in the organization to the highest in the organization. So the bottom of the page is the highest, and the top of the page are the lowest employees. So that's why it shows those anomalies there. And then the project manager that uses PMWorks, and I must say that with, and it's not to make an excuse, but a realization of the systemic problems that we have, is that with the point that the chairperson is making, where you had 15 years of an organization, and that instability at the top, it does unfortunately create a culture in the organization that is undesirable. It does embed certain issues within the organization that really need to be thoughtful in dealing with. And some of the communication issues are issues, when you look at them, are embedded in some of those historical and cultural and attitude problems that we're picking up in the organization that we need to deal with, even though we may be having technology things that we're using to deal with that. And then, of course, I do agree. The board members here, if there's anything that always rub in my wounds, is that we are an IT company. We ought to be leading in many things. We ought to be paperless. We ought to be... So all of those things, we are mindful of that, and we think that cannot be the permanent feature of this organization. We've got to change that. And when we change that, we're not going to wait until that has changed before we respond to some of the e-government issues, because our people require services and they require services now. So we need to find a way in which we respond to all of these things at the same time. It is indeed embarrassing that you are a state-owned, you are an IT institution, but you are behind in those areas, and it's not something we're proud of. It's something we just have to deal with and address appropriately. When I talk about how we are working with government departments, I am not necessarily saying all of them are entirely happy with everything. But I'm saying we have created a mechanism of working with the government departments that has enabled us to go deeper into the various issues that have faced us. Higher education, we had problems, and we've responded to some of those problems. Not all of them necessarily. Correctional services, we've had problems, and we've responded to those problems in correctional services. Justice, and so on. In most of these, we have had some successes, and those successes are serving as a way in which we are redefining our interaction with departments. You may have noticed that the Premier of the Western Cape in February, when she did the State of the Province address, she didn't have very complimentary things to say about CETA. You also have noticed that in June, when she again made the State of the Province address, she had positive things to say about CETA. We are not saying CETA has completely changed. We are saying CETA is beginning to make an impact that is desired, that is needed, that it has to make. And we are saying, though we're not where we ought to be, though we're not where we can be, though we're not where we are expected to be, we are moving in a direction that is positive. We are making some successes, minor as they are, and they are recognized by also our clients, even though our clients still have some difficulties. I think the problems we're dealing with are quite embedded, are quite deep, and they will not be addressed in a much short period of time. Organizations that face the same type of issues that CETA faces today have taken at least 4 or 5 years to resolve those. I'm not saying we should take 4 or 5 years. I'm just saying that the problems are so embedded, are so part of the culture of the organization, that we do need all of us to find a mechanism in which we deal with them in a way that's systemic, in a way that is consistent, in a way that is got a degree of tenacity and patience. I think I have tried to address most of the questions. If I did miss something, it was not. Well, the funding model, we recover for our services from the departments. The idea, even though we can't be an institution that makes a loss, but also we can't make super profits. If you look at those profits and look at it as a percentage of our turnover, it's not very big profits at all. But our objective is to drive down costs, but we need to survive. We need to continue to be self-funding into the future in order to be able to do so. And therefore, it has to be on an ongoing basis a positive contribution of some sort, because we also need to invest in infrastructure, we also need to upgrade on that infrastructure. And on that, we're not reliant on a grant. We have to generate that internally. And it is for that reason that we do have to have a positive relationship between costs and revenue. Dealing with the vacancy rate, we have had some challenges. We have had difficulty attracting the right skills at times. We have had positions that we advertised, and then we get quite a number of CVs, but we don't find anybody that would be suitable for that, because people choose not to come to an institution that they believe is not going to further their career. As we improve our image, we think that will change. Yeah, there is unemployment out there, but some of the people that are unemployed who may have the skills that we're looking at are saying, I'm not going to risk my professional career and go there. The sooner we change our image, the better we'll be able to attract skills. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir, for giving me the opportunity to step in. I think there's a question, Honourable Chair, that you asked around the structure. The current structure that is in front of the Honourable Members was approved by the Board and the Minister in April this year. And it followed a process which started in October after the appointment of the current board by cabinet in end of September of reviewing the strategy of the organization, and there are certain things that came out as being imperatives to look at for the organization to shift. And if honorable members look, for instance, there's the area of procurement that has been isolated and raised up, as well as the area of ICT security, and there's a lot of work that has been done within those two blocks, those two areas, but also then the creation of three specific positions that were previously not there, two positions being those of deputy CEOs, and the third position being that of a chief technology officer. Until now, SITA has not had a position of a chief technology officer, which the board identified as a very crucial and critical position. The strategy plan that we have on the table is obviously going to be subjected to a review now, because we have new administration for 5 years. We've got new emphasis that are coming up. We have to look as a board and look at what are the areas of adjustments that need to happen in terms of government's priorities for this current 5 years. Thank you.
I'll tell you why. You are carrying before the committee next month for your annual performance. And if you have not done what you are saying you are going to do, you are going to have a problem. I'm just flagging it, Minister. That statement is very worrying.
Thank you, Sir President. From us, it's just few matters that we are engaging, we have been engaging with the Chair, and next week, Sita is having a board meeting. And we've asked that after the board meeting, we should have an opportunity to speak with the AGM. After that AGM, we have an opportunity to interact with the board, so that we can take the whole button on the issues we expect from them. But I think broadly, because of this transition, yes, the strategic plan must be there, but they must talk to the MTS, all of them. And they must talk to the state of the nation address by President in June. And they must also talk to what we intend to also as a department. So those are the changes of emphasis which may come, because we can amend. We did ask the speaker that we may amend just the course that came to us when we get on some of the strategic plan. The real challenge really, Shepherd, I think from my initial interaction, I think the first problem when you've got the new entity is whether we are aligned in vision and thinking. Sometimes it takes us a long time, but I think my sense is that we're going to be aligned with the board on what is to be done from the previous intentions. The biggest problem, the Chair said, is on the procurement side. If you can solve the procurement side, and we've emphasized it to the body management and the board when we're interacting this week, that some of those things must just be sorted out. Not that we will eliminate the problems, but if we put up systems and screening, the officials were involved, because the cabinet has instructed that all elements people must be cleared, they must be prioritized. And two, we must have identify the irregularities before they happen. I mean, things that Lemon was talking about as people declare this interest. Now that the declaration on its own is what all of this, particularly for the systems in place, and more so now in the terms of technology, this can be done quickly, whether for the last, they can be done electronically and monitored, and demand that if there are changes in your status, you put them, so that the system can just warn the leadership or the board that there are potential problems coming in. The other challenge is in the quality of, as Duchenne, the CEO of service offered to department. One of the matters issues we raised last week was that if you check in terms of revenue from the services, I think some of the guys they are not here because this was a high level first presentation to the committee. In terms of revenue, we derive mainly from those departments which complain. So we have to really pull all our thoughts to make sure that those departments, whether it's the security department in particular, that we service them to their satisfaction, because there were previous systems who say we don't know this is for freedom. So it's going to be very important if they are a major source of our revenue that we service them better. and with integrity too. And also be judged by the cost. Because most of the complaint is about the cost, that we are charging people more than what they can get some of the things in the market and the, in the delay. I think they're bears with those matters. I think the discussions and what the court is saying is that really if we have to get this thing scale, you can't get the scale if you are dependent on each individual department wanting this, their own specification, which don't talk to what as a government. So FISA has to set some standards, has to help us set some guidelines and standards, because if you just ask me as an individual department, they may want a Rolls Royce when I really need a Corolla to fulfill my functions. So say if you are fulfilling these functions, what do you actually need? And we actually need plans well in advance from the other departments. Because it doesn't have to just, we must know your department what's going to be the IT need in the next 5 years. But departments start developing their own plans. It is in that way that we feel that FISA can be able then to plan in advance and buy these things at scale and or acquire the contracts at scale at a reduced cost if we have port volumes. We hope that through interaction with other committees that will help, because the share has been in Parliament for a long time. One of the biggest problems in all departments is what dumping of the budget at the end. And it's usually the IT. I buy computers. so prevent this, so people plan what IT instruments that they can donate. If we are saying, for instance, education must provide tablets, by changing the scheme to every child, they must then pass on the plan what is going to be needed in a tablet and so on, so that they can then put the specifications themselves, say, this will be the best specification if you want this objective, and then we can get this kind of tablet at this cost. So that's what is going to be, and we hope that cooperation will help us to. The turnover change, I was asking my DG because we have got the CEO, I don't know how many times the board, how many turnaround strategies they have. So, in my previous life in cabinet, it's very titanic. Always turning, but it's crazy. But also, it's not only limited in the board, to the board. I was just asking the dear to just show me in the last 6 years how many ministers. also, that has got impact. If you have had the people in this term in 6 years, that's a high turnover. because whenever these senior people come, I'm not saying the ministers do that, but I know whenever the CEO comes, they also want to implement their vision. So it becomes really a problem. now, my understanding, we have borrowed the CEO for a period of time, and I'm being certain that he may also expire his time. So I don't know. I'm just trying. So I'm just trying to say for us the understanding to the committee that we really have this challenge of high turnover. We'll talk about the. You know, the real problem in a technical environment like this, we've been saying the fact is where they even declare everybody unemployed or not. What is it? Yes, because we are trying to change things. But it's very difficult in government to change things. You end up absorbing the very same people you're trying to rationalize. And the problems continue. What we've been emphasizing in directing the board is that in a technical environment, we need more technical and skilled people. And few managers who manage that things are done correctly. So you need more project managers, and maybe that CEO and other board members. But those project managers must be technical and heavy and know how of what is the things they are allowed to be run around by the industry. Knowing very well that we are also competing with the very same industry. The key thing is not to be captured by the industry. You must have the adequate skills to do your work. So in closing, we felt that this was just an introductory meeting. The committee is at liberty to call back CETA on specific things. In relation to their progress, so they can come and elaborate. We really appreciate the interaction from us, but we have noted your concerns. I think we share the same concerns too. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. I think for me, one of the issues, and I noticed that the members I wanted to do, but then I request that we actually try and wrap up and do, but there's something that I need to flag, Minister, and act later, Minister. The last amendment was in 2002. And if you look at the Act itself, the Act still speaks about Telecommunications Act. It still speaks about Electronic Communication and Transmission Act. We no longer have those acts. It's outdated. It needs to be reviewed. I think that's one of the things that we need to put as a priority. But again, my advice to this, I don't know if you have it, because you need somebody in the industry that is going to sit and monitor development in legislation that affects you. You need to be able to flag it either to the minister to say the act needs to be changed. Because you can't sit with an act with things that have more than 5 things that in parliament these 2 acts have not been. So you can't have your legislation outdated more than 5 years. It means you're operating on an illegal basis. Because you spoke about CEO connectivity, no mandate here, school connectivity, not. I know the fact because I had to go through legislation, and we have a session as a committee on school connectivity on the 12th of September. And we looked at everyone who has a legal mandate to do school connectivity, and we have called all of them in 2018. We do not have that in place for the legislation. Unless if GBE says go and do this for us. But in terms of, and that can get into trouble because you might get that, you know, it's done with the current regulations. So you just want to do it. So I'm just flagging where there are challenges, potential problems that you might encounter. So the advice is that try and have somebody in January who would manage part of the responsibilities to take development legislation in Parliament that affects you. Because if we amend something here, we will be amending, Minister will bring legislation. Your act is to speak to those legislation, for example. That is proper. So for me, that's one of the things that I think we need to look at. So the issue of school connectivity that must have tightened up and all that. But again, I think we need, I agree, Minister, we need to go back and have a session. We might take this as an introduction, but it just reflects certain things that we need to look at. And we'll look at our program. We'll definitely have another session with CETA. Because CETA is one of the backbone institutions for government. If you can't get things right, you're going to have it on another session.
will impact on the ability for government to provide e-health in school. Everything that we want to do electronically, if government wants to rely on for us, if we can assist in the process. Because what we do here is not about coming and hammering, it's about assisting. Showing the gaps, and would appreciate if the board can go back on the issues that we have raised. Try and see how we touch them up. Even through the executive flow and all that. To look at the issues that have been raised, because I wouldn't want a situation where when we interact again, we find ourselves predicting the same issues, sounding like what we are called, but we sing the same songs. I wouldn't want to start having grey hair at my age. To really appreciate that is that Prime Minister has that chance, as you can see. It shows you there's a difference. I think ANC tried to balance Minister. So I really appreciate, maybe from my side, if you can bear me with that. But let's try and build on what has been raised here. Yes, it's the third intention, but a lot of issues have come up from the committee members, and a lot of things have been flagged. We believe in dialogue, that's why I asked for the slides to go down from 41 to 15. Because the issue is you flag the issues with dialogue, you engage. Because if you talk long, and by the time the questions are coming, it's not clear. It's not assisting us with the conversation that we have. And we'd like to have more conversation, more in depth. As I say, that we are going to look at another follow-up meeting. But we must just get to the nitty-gritties. A lot of things I have raised, I noticed you promised to come back to them. We have to get into the details. Because if it means that it's another department that is making not behave, we'll have to call that department to come with it over that committee. Parliament in the process of joint committees, so we can call a joint committee with that particular department to try and assist, because we can look back, or you can look back because of somebody else. So part of the process of what we do is to assist the government to function effectively, and we must do the oversight in accounting and ensuring that the money that is set aside is well spent. Because there's a lot of money in ICT that is everywhere, but we need to start charging up and make sure that there's value for money for government in terms of what we do. Unfortunately, a chairperson of the board might have been turned around by the public out there who are looking for service. Don't care about that. They're becoming impatient. All they want is already deliver. They want to see government deliver the service. It's all out of all of us to try and manage at our best level to ensure that there's effectiveness in how we function as government. So the impatience out there, we don't want one day they do it with minister, whether that we don't have an ICP or complaint or what. We want to see that we must be able to do our best, and so that when we account, we are able to save that our bit. So we really appreciate you coming here, in touching with us, spending time with us, so that we can enhance our work, and looking forward to the next 5 years working together in this school. Thank you very much. Like to ask the commission members.